I guess what I'm trying to encourage people to do in the book is not just look at whatever time or place you got in a race as that being successful. There's so many other things that you can be motivated by, whether it's exploring new trails or trying to figure out how to get more elevation gain in or get to a summit or whatever it is.
Before we get to this week's podcast with runner and author Brendan Leonard, we want to take time to thank Path Projects for their support and for making great running wear. You know, spring means new gear, and Path Projects did not disappoint. They have new shorts with new colors, now sizes from extra small to double XL, and they have a new short called the Wheeler FT short, which is perfect for our outdoor lifestyle. It was designed for a morning hike, a jump in the lake, and then off to Sunday brunch. Path Projects is an efficient and value-driven direct-to-consumer business model. It's made with the most innovative fabrics and materials that you can be sure will perform for a very long time. They are so sure that they offer a 60-day return policy. Find all their gear at pathprojects.com.
Ladies and gentlemen of the worldwide ultra running community, you are listening to nothing less than the greatest Trail Running Nation podcast on earth. It is the Trail Runner Nation podcast.
But I know it's on the upper edge, and you guys have won a couple of awards. And
just because the facts aren't accurate, don't worry about it. This is a podcast. We don't even have a letterbox. Nobody's going to write us. We don't even know where it is. I started to question myself. Maybe I'm a badminton player and not a runner. Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Don Freeman.
And I'm Scott War, and I hate running.
Well, Scott, you usually say that about three quarters of the way into the run, but never this early and never on the podcast. So what makes you say that?
You know, I finally can admit it, because today we have Brendan Leonard, who is the author of the book, I Hate Running and You Can Too, How to Get Started and Make Sense of an Irrational Passion. And it's just a fun book. And I read it and I thought, you know what? I honestly can say to myself, I hate running. And we're going to get into that.
I'm going to interrupt, Scott, because when I've told people what podcast we're going to do, I always pause and say, yeah, but the word hate, instead of an A, has a heart that is yellow, which is means friendship. So he loves to hate running. And I think with our discussion, we'll learn that we're in his same camp, that we have a lot of similarities. So welcome to the podcast, Brendan.
Thanks for having me, you guys.
Brendan is an adventurer. He's an ultra marathoner, lived in a van for a few years, skier, biker. He just likes to do all sorts of things. He rode his bike across America, for crying out loud. And we just found out that he hosts a podcast called Off the Couch, which I'm going to try to download and see what that's all about. But he wrote this book, and initially I thought, boy, That's kind of bold about running. Mm-hmm. Brendan, tell us, why did you write a book about how much you hate running?
I mean, I think it's mostly just a clever title to get people's people in the door a little bit to pick it up and go, wait a minute, what is this about? You know, and it's sort of like I feel like it's like a 90s infomercial or something where it's like, I hate running and you can too. Follow this simple plan, you know, that's just 1995, three installments of 1995. But yeah, I mean, I have a complicated relationship with it. And I think a lot of people probably do. You rarely meet someone who's just like always psyched to do it. And yeah, it's a thing that I know is good for me and I want to do it. But most of me doesn't want to start doing it. And I think a lot of people have that. And I think it's just a way of relating to people, normal people who are trying to find something that will actually get them out the door. I think for me, I don't know if this is true for everyone, but for me, it's exercises. We're just trying to find a way to trick ourselves into thinking it's fun, you know? Some people would do that with like CrossFit classes, you know, people do that with weightlifting. We do it with like treadmills, you know, or Stairmasters or something like that. And we're just, we try all these funny things, and running is just the one that works for me. And I've spent several years now trying to trick myself into thinking I like it. And it's part of the time it works, you know, but mostly I'm like, oh God, I got to do that today. That's a thing I have to do. And then when I get out the door, I'm like, yeah, this is actually pretty great, you know? So yeah, it's trying to illustrate that sort of relationship we have.
If you're listening out there and you think, you know what, I think I've read every single book on running, you know, why do we need another one? This one is completely different, fun to read. You pick it up and you start thumbing through it, and it becomes something much like I Hate Running, but something you love to do because the graphics in there and the illustrations and just the way that you communicate, the font size, the whole bit makes it just an easy, you could flip through, open it up on any page and feel like you are right in the middle of the story. You don't need to read and take notes from page 1 to 100 to really get the theme. You can identify with just about any chapter or any illustration he has. And that's a question I have for you. Brendan, who did the illustration? Did you draw this stuff up, or did you go out there and find someone to put it together?
Oh, no, yeah, I drew it. I drew all of it. So for the last, I guess, almost a little over 4 years, I've been drawing illustrations on an iPad for Instagram, and then incorporating them into my writing and column I write for Outside Magazine and my website. And I think it's easy to believe that I drew them myself because they're not super technical, or it's basically the program I have is I've figured out how to turn the Apple Pencil into basically a Sharpie and draw. It's very simple. I use probably 3% of the capability of the app and just draw these simple charts, and have tried to take these concepts or jokes and like make them simple and kind of engaging for the few seconds you have somebody on Instagram. And it became a really fun way to make I Hate Running and You Can Too more reader friendly. You know, the book itself is about, I think, 11,000 words total. So it's like, they're like New Yorker articles that are longer than this book, but 65 illustrations and charts just to break up the text and say, yeah, like this, you know, that this is what it would look like if you did this. So it's a fun way to keep people engaged, I think, in our time of short attention spans. And, you know, it's funny. I'm like standing my iPad up on a copy of The Lore of Running, which is, how big is that book? Like 1,100 pages. The thing is, it's like 2 inches thick. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is the opposite of that. You know, which it's a completely different thing, obviously. But yeah, I wanted to make something that was quick, easy to you know, get through. And like with any book, I feel like you're going to take maybe 3 or 4 things with you when you put it down and you move on and go about the rest of your life. And hopefully there's 3 or 4 of those things for everybody that help them either continue to love running or just get started doing it.
Well, I think that's one of the attractions to the book is it's not just for new runners, but also those who have been in the sport for a long time. We always like to try to understand our culture and our community. And I think this helps define that for those who've been around for a long time, but it also helps a new runner understand that, you know, it's not all unicorns and rainbows. You know, you may talk to a runner that's been around for a long time and they go, oh, I love my runs. I can't live without my daily run. And that's the one time a day that I feel free. And you know, sometimes that's true, but sometimes that's a bunch of crap. you know, and we all do it because of the results or some of the, I think there's an illustration in there of a timeline of how much you enjoy a given training run. And the first 2/3 are yuck. And then there's like this little segment of time where you go, you know what? I really, really like this. And then the rest of it is crap again. And so I think that it's good that we kind of pull back the curtain for those that are starting to run that say, you know what? This isn't easy. And there are days that you're going to wake up and go, this is crap. I don't want to get my shoes on and go running. But it also helps us understand and define ourselves as experienced runners too. So that's the thing that I had a smile on my face the entire time I was reading it.
Oh, that's cool to hear. Yeah. And I think like anytime you write something, you're just trying to capture a common human sentiment, you know, that we, and communicate it, put it into words or put it into a piece of art. And so that people can find it and say, that's me too. You know, we've all read things like that where we go, oh, that's, I've always felt that, but I've never put it into words. And now I have that. And you know, you have this quote and you put it on your wall or whatever. So I think you're trying to tap into that as a writer. And I'm glad it makes sense to you since, you know, you're not new to the game, so to speak.
As I look at the illustrations, it brings back the old saying, you know, a picture's worth a thousand words. And when you just look at one of these illustrations, I think, you know, we could do an entire podcast just on that topic, on that illustration. And one of them that comes to mind is the official calendar of perfect weather for running. Can you just describe that better from you than me? Because I'll slaughter it and probably miss it by 50%, but I can't tell you how true this illustration is.
Oh, it's like, both of us live in pretty, you know, no one on this podcast right now lives in like a place like Alaska or Seattle where a lot of days are really bad. But I spent 15 years in Denver and there was a lot of good days, but you know, were they ever perfect? I don't know. What's perfect, you know? So it's a full year calendar and there's just different colors for too cold, too snowy, too cold and snowy, too rainy, too windy, et cetera, you know? And there's four perfect days in the whole calendar, which is about how I feel most of the time. You know, it's such a game of just trying to get dressed sometimes. And, you know, you nail it some days. And somebody asked me, like, what's your layering system that you have figured out? And I'm like, I don't have one figured out. I'm wrong like 75% of the time, at least, you know. So, yeah, I think it feels like that all the time. And it's just to establish, you know, that you still have to get out and do it if you want. You know, you can't let a little bit of weather keep you down, especially because there's so many days where you can convince yourself that it's too hot or too cold. You know, like, yeah, I'll just stay inside and watch Netflix. That'll be better for me, you know.
So. Yeah, I think if I was to do an entire podcast on that calendar that you have there, I think probably part of the conversation would just be procrastination. We can always find something, whether it's, oh, you know, my favorite running gear is still in the washer. You know, I'll wait for that. Or the perfect day, maybe it's going to be better at 10 than it is at 7, and then it's 10, and then maybe 3 is better. I mean, procrastination could be an entire, well, it could be an entire podcast, not an episode, but in an entire career.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. What are your favorite methods of procrastination? You know, things like that. I've learned to just tell myself most of the time to like just run in the afternoon, you know, later in the afternoon or before dinner, which doesn't work for everyone. But I'm like, well, that's cool. Then I'm not actually procrastinating it. I've planned it to do it then. And then when it comes time to actually do it, then I procrastinate it for like an hour and then I finally go do it. But yeah, if you have a whole day and you're scheduling your whole day, you're like, I got to run today. You can find all these different reasons to like just keep pushing it back and pushing it back. And then suddenly it's like, oh my God, it's going to be dark. I need to go for my run, you know?
Yeah. I think I have a solution for that. As you were speaking, it came to mind. I think that I'm going to create this hunter gatherer technique. Is you can't eat that day until you get your run in. And it just makes sense.
I've been trying to do more meditation and I've like started to, you know, it's a 10-minute thing, but it's so hard to squeeze in. It's like an artist I follow has this thing about the one thing you're trying to do today and he draws it as a Tetris game, if you remember that.
Yeah.
And it's like this block, it's like slowly making its way down to this gap that's perfectly shaped and then it moves over and doesn't fit. It's like... But I make myself my rule is I have to meditate before I drink coffee. So I'm literally sitting in my office with like a pot of coffee sitting there like 10 feet away, and I'm like, okay, sit in the chair and do it for your 10 minutes. And it's like, Man, it is tough. You know, it's tough to make yourself do it. So I don't know. Let me know how the food thing goes.
How is that cold coffee, Brendan?
Yeah. No, it's an insulated pot. So okay. It's good. Yeah. Otherwise, I don't know if I could do it. Yeah. How
is that cold? You know, one of the for sure. The book again is I Hate Running and You Can Too. This is the one book. I mean, you always want to share good ideas, but I would suggest that you pick up two or three copies of this and send them to your running pals, and because it's something that you can discuss and you can, like Don and I, as we were reading this book, we were screen capturing some of the diagrams and sending them back and forth. And I want to tell you one that really just hit home for me today. And it's the very last page of the book before the epilogue. And the title is, I Should Probably Go for a Run Today. And there's a bar graph, if you will, and a big chunk of it is procrastinate. A very, very small part of it is put on my running clothes. Another big chunk is procrastinate while wearing running clothes. And then another smaller section that's running. And I just laughed my head off this morning because I was going out for a run today. This morning before we recorded the podcast, I had my running gear on and was actually out the door, sitting in my truck, getting ready to drive to the trailhead, and I never got out of the driveway. I turned around, went back inside, and I sat out there for probably 30 minutes, and I just laughed because there are some times and some days that happens. So I just thought it was hilarious, and Don and I got a good laugh out of that.
Scott was waiting for sure. The perfect weather.
He was. Yeah. I don't remember exactly, but I think I actually may have drawn that chart while wearing running clothes and procrastinating, and then went for a run. But I don't remember. But yeah, I've shoveled snow and running gear, you know, like you ever find yourself just like taking out the trash, like doing all these things that you're just avoiding it that you wouldn't really normally wear running clothes to do, but you're just like, wow, I'm really taking it to the nth degree here.
So Brendan, here's my question, because I need a little help. How can I, when I finally get to the trailhead and I have my phone in my hand, and I have all these notifications, and I just thought, oh, you know what? I'll just answer this email real quick before I get out of the truck and start my run. I need to figure out a way that doesn't happen, because I always waste like 20 or 30 minutes because I hate the first part of the run. I don't want to get out and take that first mile. Is just not fun.
You know, I just watched The Social Dilemma on Netflix, and a lot of people just tell you to turn off your notifications, which is what I do. I like basically only get phone calls, and I get very few of those. But yeah, it's that takes it off the screen, and then you can just like put the phone on, or you can put the phone on airplane mode on your way there. I don't listen to music or podcasts or anything when I run. So, but I often take my phone just for longer runs. Sometimes for trail navigation, and then maybe if I'm taking photos, but it's always on airplane mode. But yeah, that's a tough one, man. If you figure out how to avoid procrastination, I think you're like, that's like the perpetual motion machine. Like, you know, that would be an incredible discovery. It'd be like a theory of relativity, you know?
Find a running companion, right? Somebody that is there for you and says, hey, let's go. Because I know that when we meet out there, Scott, there we don't sit in our cars looking at each other's, you know, and the temperature gauge going, it's not 72 yet.
Yeah, right. Let's give it a few more minutes before it might stop raining. Yeah, you know?
Get out there and go.
No, for sure. That's a great strategy. Yep.
Hey, Brendan, I also want to compliment you. Probably the most creative table of contents. It looks like the GPS track of a Candace Burt 200 miler because it weaves throughout the page and then has the chapter headings as aid stations throughout this trail of things, and it's actually brilliant. I thought it was when I first looked at it, I thought, oh, this is a diagram where he's trying to describe something about trail running, and then I realized, wait, no, this is a table of contents. And it's really creative. I wanted to get into this can be a book for new runners. And the first chapter is Start Small, Start Now. Tell us a little bit about how you started running and your experiences.
Yeah. You know, I would like to tell you that that table of contents is actually, it started out as I traced the New York City Marathon map. And used that. And we went back and forth a little bit, my editor, and said, maybe you need to fill out the page a little bit more. So it got stretched out and moved and stuff. But it literally was some of those turns are actually somewhere in the five boroughs. So that's how it started. But yeah, it would have been cool to have it just the New York City Marathon map just for an Easter egg. But I think it makes more sense this way. Yeah, you know, I ran, this is some of this is covered in the introduction. I ran sprints in high school on the track team. I was fast for me for about the last few weeks of my junior year and my whole senior year. I ran hundreds and 200s, and my coach put me in the 400 a couple times, and I was just kind of like would start to die at like 250 meters and you know come in eighth place every single time, and I'm like, coach, that's long distance, I can't do that. you know why. And then, yeah, I didn't run recreationally or for fitness much until 2005. Long story short, I was trying to quit smoking, because I was smoking a pack a day for like 6 years. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to sign up for a marathon and that will help me, quit smoking. And it did. It was the only thing that succeeded. I had tried all the other methods you use to quit smoking. Got up three times a week and ran 5 miles in the park by my house. And then on Saturday, I would run 1 mile longer every week until I got to like 19 miles. And then finally ran a marathon. It was the worst thing I ever did. it was awful. And I decided to take 9 years off after that. And I would like do trail runs with friends and like could, you know, I'd run like 6 or 7 miles with them, as a thing, but I was mostly, climbing and mountaineering and doing stuff like that and backpacking. So it was like this thing that I could do with some friends who didn't do those other sports. It did like the Grand Canyon rim to rim in that time, but hiked most of it, ran the middle of probably 7 miles or whatever, and then hiked the rest of it. And then in 2015, a friend and I, my friend Jason and I we had always talked about the idea of doing an ultra marathon, you know, like, could we do that? Who are these crazy people who do these things? And, I signed up for my first 50K, I think I had 23 days to train. Wow. Cause it was just on a complete lark. Jason had started training without me and he was telling me how awful one of his training runs had gone and like ran out of water, was like totally dehydrated. It was hot. And I'm like, God, this sounds really awesome. Maybe I should do that.
Yeah. You're the perfect candidate for getting out there.
So the next day I got up and was like, I'm going to run 10 miles around the neighborhood just to see if I can handle it. And I did, and nothing broke. And the next day I felt okay. So I signed up for the race and was like, fine, we'll see. And, barely finished, you know, I like got to mile 26 and I just had this incredible knee pain and I was limping away from the aid station going, whoa, what is this? I have no idea. Did I just tear something? And I got about 200 feet away from the aid station and was like, I think I'm going to call it because it's September and I want to be able to ski this year. So I think I'm just going to walk back and tell them I quit. And then I started having this like Midwestern, I don't want to put anybody out conversation in my head where I said, well, geez, what are they going to do when I get there? They'll have to like call my wife and then she'll have to, oh, this just sounds like so much trouble. I think I'll just finish. So I just turned around and kept walking and kept trying to massage my knee. And eventually what it was just some IT band pain, like not surprisingly. But I walked a couple miles, jogged a couple, and then I was full on, you know, able to run through the finish and finished it. And, from there it was just like, let's try 50 miles. Okay. That went okay. Let's try 100. And, I ran my first 100-mile race. About 2 years later, after that first 50K. And, you know, in every instance, almost just finishing just a few minutes or like an hour or so away from the cutoff, you know, like I wasn't burning up the course by any means. I was actually just mystified where all the time went, you know, like what happened? And like, oh, you sat down for 30 minutes and ate, you know, pizza. Oh, okay. That's why. Yeah. That's what happened. Yeah. It took you 25 minutes to change your pants, you know? So,
and you can walk, you can walk a long ways in a half an hour or 25 minutes, you know, if, and you, you see that when you're out there. So, hey, I've got to take a bio break here, Scott. And he says, okay, I'll walk. And I'm thinking, you know what? This guy didn't walk at all. He must have ran because I had to run pretty hard to catch him. So walking is very, very efficient.
Yeah. Yeah. Even, well, I managed to do that somehow really slowly in a lot of races. I don't know what happens, but yeah, it's like a time machine. Like, wow, how is it? How have I been out here for 32 hours already? That's amazing. I don't know what happened.
We'd like to take a short break to thank John G. for supporting this episode. They can be found at johng.com. John G. is dedicated to exploring, connecting, and giving back through running. They offer high-quality running apparel and accessories, from sling bags and gloves to tops, bottoms, and outerwear for both men and women. John G. just launched their spring line, which includes the 6-inch Avio Vent Multi-Short. It's a lightweight, four-way stretch trail short and includes a moisture-wicking brief liner and 5 pockets integrated into the waistband. Their goal is to manufacture their outdoor gear in a sustainable way, and the first rule to make something sustainable is to make it last. You can get your John G. gear with a 15% off coupon if you go to johng.com and enter the code TRN at checkout. John G. is also going to be giving away a pair of AVO shorts to 10 of our Patreon subscribers. So make sure you sign up on Patreon for your chance to win. Now back to our conversation with Brendan Leonard.
And we recently talked with Alex Hutchinson about walking, and all of us at some point have this epiphany that walking is running, that it's okay to walk. But it takes us a while, and it takes a little bit of pushing that pride aside to say, you know what, I'm a runner, and I'm going to run this entire thing, and I'm not going to walk. But eventually, we figure out that walking is okay.
Did he say that? Because he seems like a fast guy.
Oh, he is very fast.
Yeah.
What's crazy about him, he's crazy smart, too, but he can talk about things that we can understand, so...
To normal people.
Yeah.
Yeah. We, so I made a film called How to Run 100 Miles with sort of to tell the story of my friend Jason's first 100 mile race, and ended up I had to run it too. And, it's been on YouTube for, I guess, 3 years now. But my favorite comment is always, it's always a guy saying, "You didn't run 100 miles, you walked most of it." And I was like, how did you deduce that from the, the amount of footage that's on here? Like, but they, I think people, you know, the particular race we did, like literally no one runs the whole thing. It's the Run Rabbit Run 100. The first, I think it's like the first 3 miles, you gain 3,000 feet. It's just straight up. And it's like, I'm like, yeah, dude, give it a shot sometime. Let me know how it goes. And, you know, it's a gray area for people. Like, I think, you know, even the fastest finishers at the UTMB are hiking a bit of it. You know, the slowest people are hiking a lot more of it, but it's not like if you can't, I think that becomes a barrier too to people where they're like, I don't know how you could run 50 miles. And I'm like, well, I didn't, you know, I walked like, you know, a big chunk of it. You could do it too. So I think to tell people that it's all running is sort of, it keeps people out probably because they're intimidated. So yeah, I'm a big fan.
Well, that's kind of the inside information. You know, we don't let that out too much. We advertise it's an endurance run, right? Yes. I mean, the belt buckle or the shirt or the decal in the back of your car does say 100-mile run. So we keep the facts quiet. You told the story about that last aid station in your long run, about the pain in your knee. Did I tear something? And it made me want to talk about it because it's like a phantom pain. It's like a just something so severe. It's like, did someone just stab me in the knee? Because this is the sharpest, this has to be a serious injury. I should probably get helicoptered out of here into the ER room to have somebody evaluate this thing. It's significant pain. And I've had that. And that's what I want to talk about. It just kind of shows up randomly. It never shows up when I'm not tired. It usually shows up when I'm looking for an excuse. My body says, here, I'll complain here at the knee. You know, I'll help satisfy your desire to quit. And so, but it's funny. And then as soon as you acknowledge it and then you just kind of work through it for a minute, it goes away and it doesn't even come back and it just disappears. How can something that hurts that much be fleeting and quick and leave as soon as it came? It's crazy.
this is like ultra marathons, right?
Yeah. You know?
I was talking to my friend Sanjay Rawal, who directed the film 3100, Run and Become.
Yeah, we talked to him.
Yeah, and he was telling me a story about he has not done the 3100 mile race, but he's done the 6 day race. Yeah, where it's like averaging 40 miles or 50 miles a day for 6 straight days. And he was talking about how he got injured but he kept going. And by day 4, he realized that his body was recovering while running. And basically, and I was like, that is some of the craziest stuff I've ever heard, but sure. And, I think there's definitely people other than me have said, you know, that what you think you're capable of is only about half of what you think what you can actually do, you know? Mm-hmm. And, I think that's one thing that ultra running has kind of taught me, where that pain is probably not a permanent injury, you know? Keep going, see what happens. Sometimes it probably is for people, but a lot of the time for me, it doesn't end up being something that's debilitating. It'll be something that hurts for a week after the race. But yeah, it's like that IT band pain or whatever it is. So maybe I'm lucky, knock on wood, who knows?
Well, on this phantom pain that I was speaking of, this knife-like sudden sharp pain, there was no reason for it, and it's happened more than once. It could be in my ankle, it could be in different places, but it just all of a sudden appears. No logical reason. I didn't step on it wrong. I didn't do anything different. It just decided to appear. And then I think to myself, what mechanism of injury? What did you just do to create that? Did all of a sudden your knee just decide to give up? And it's so what's really crazy about this pain is there's no rationale for it. It just kind of appears. And so I don't want to encourage people to run through their pain, because sometimes pain is real. Sometimes there's an injury. Sometimes there's swelling. Sometimes there's things that are torn. And sometimes you should get off the trail or off the road and into a chair and under some ice. But in this case, phantom pain is very curious. And I think you need an illustration for phantom pain. I think somewhere in your repertoire of your artwork, when we go to your museum and to the showing, we'll see that one on display.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if that'll happen. I appreciate the sentiment, but yeah, for sure. No, it's interesting. You know, it's like learning to figure out the difference between the two is probably a lifelong thing for most of us, for sure.
Well, and on the flip side, you guys have probably had this situation too, where maybe you did land on a rock kind of lopsided and you twist your ankle and it hurts, but you just continue to run. And kind of, I'm thinking back to the old baseball adage, you know, rub a little dirt on it. But if you were to stop and go, my ankle, and sit down and nurse your ankle, it would probably swell up and become a big thing. But excellent. If you just continue to run, for some reason, at least for me, the times where I've thought, oh man, I've really done some damage here, but if I just continue to run for a little while, the pain goes away. And miraculously, it turns out to be nothing.
Yeah, there's some crazy stuff, like pain and the relationship to the mind. And like I had read a study, this is months ago, I was talking to a friend about it, about if you have anxiety about pain, the pain is actually increased by that. So if you, it's one thing to twist your ankle, but if you twist your ankle and while training for a race and you're like, oh no, what if I'm not able to run that race I've been planning on all year? Then you focus more on the pain and it's more painful. You know, there's insane stuff that, you know, that I think we're just beginning to figure out that happens with the brain and injuries. And it's very fascinating.
Page 35 has a fantastic, it's a lifelong lesson that we learn in running and running distance, about pacing ourselves, about measure done and we'll probably do again, proves its lesson in the end that coming in walking isn't the priority of going out too fast and too hard. And you show through these three bar graphs, finish times and how you can just be more efficient by putting in many different walking breaks or pacing breaks through there. And I think page 35 is a lifelong lesson on how to manage yourself during a race. And there's just a lot of good lessons like this as you read through. And you can be, you know, a first time runner or a veteran of veterans and go, yep, that's absolutely true. You can confirm it because you've done all three of the different types of styles of bar graphs you have on here. It's really a good book for coaches. It's a good book for people. Just well done.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. And that's a lesson that gets into in the next chapter. I learned that, mountaineering because I would go out with my friends and we'd like try to climb up this thing and we'd be stopping every 15 minutes because we were out of oxygen. And I did a guided climb of Mount Shasta like 12 years ago and realized that the guide's number one job is to just keep you going slow enough that you don't have to stop. So it's, that sort of idea about walking comes from, I think one way to look at running is that you're focused on your time. And I've always been focused on the mileage. Like I want to finish the mileage no matter what. And that becomes, you know, so I've finished all the races I've run, but, yeah, going slow is okay in that case. You know, you don't get down about, oh, my split for the last mile or two was way slower. I don't pay attention to that. I'm like, am I okay? Are they going to kick me off the course? Okay, I'm fine. You know, I just want to finish this 50 miles. You know, I just want to get to the finish line and get my belt buckle or medal or whatever it is, you know.
You know, I love, because that's a little bit of a pet peeve of mine, I love chapter 12, which is F busy. And it's one of my pet peeves when I talk to people and the first thing they tell me is how busy they are and that they're just burning the candle on both ends and they don't have enough time to get everything done. I really love this chapter because it resonates with me. You can never be too busy. What you can be is a poor planner and a poor prioritizer. Tell us a little bit about how that chapter came about.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote a piece with the same title years ago. And to be fair, there are people who are too busy, like multiple jobs, single parents, mm-hmm. you know, kids. I don't know that they're going to pick up this book and be like, what should I do? You know, I think for the audience that is reading this book, this chapter applies to. But yeah, to me, I think the greatest BS-ometer that I have is the screen time app on my phone where you open it up and or you're like, I'll get notifications every week and it'll be like, you spent 2 hours and 9 minutes on your phone every day last week. I'm like, what are you talking about? How is that possible? You know, and, you know, if I could convert that into like exercise or like reading books, I would be so productive, you know? And I am, I'm sort of not the type of person who believes in the like how to, you know, maximize the efficiency of every area of your life and like morning routines of CEOs of Fortune 500 companies, blah, blah, blah. I'm just kind of like, am I busy or am I making an excuse? Cause a lot of times I'm just making an excuse. You're like, yeah, I just haven't had time to run. You're like, well, you had 2 hours and 9 minutes to look at Instagram or Weather Underground or like you maybe could have used that time to run, you know? So I think it's more of a way of just calling bullshit on people like, and myself included, you know, like, yeah, what happened all that time? I know what happened to it. You were on your phone, you know?
Well, and make no mistake. I didn't mean to be calling out people because I can call out myself more than I can call out other people. And I think that's the reason why I it's a pet peeve of mine is because a lot of times I think I'm way too busy to do anything. And it's just a matter of organization or a matter of priority, probably a little bit more for me. So
for sure. my rule is I can't make fun of them. I have to make fun of us. So if I'm included in the group, it's fair game, which it is, you know? So yeah, I agree with you.
Page 99. This is something we've talked about in the past and I've often wondered about of what motivates each one of us as we pull up to the line. How many people are running the Boston Marathon or any race? There's more than three people that are going to stand on the podium. What drives the rest of the group besides those top three winners to be out there and compete? And you've got a illustration on that. The people with a real chance of winning, a very small piece of the pie in this graph, and the rest of us who just fill up the rest of the rest of that piece, and it makes for a great discussion. What does motivate the rest of us, do you think, about getting out there, getting a bib, signing up for a race? Where's the win for the rest of us? Because you don't go somewhere unless you can pull something away that's positive.
Yeah, I mean, I would almost flip that question back on the two of you, because I think it's different for everybody for sure. But I guess what I'm trying to encourage people to do in the book is not just look at whatever time or place you got in a race as that being successful. You know, I think with road running, there's fewer things to fixate on besides speed. So a lot of us are, you know, you're interested in how fast you ran a marathon or a half marathon or whatever. With trail running, maybe you two feel the same way. There's so much else, so many other things that you can be motivated by, whether it's exploring new trails or trying to figure out how to get more elevation gain in or get to a summit or whatever it is. And I think that shows in who shows up at an ultra marathon race versus who shows up at a road marathon or a road race. And one of the things that really struck me when I got into ultra running is how like normal everyone at the starting line looks. You know, we're not all people with 3% body fat who look like gazelles. You know, I look around and I'm like, wow, you know, people look like me. And we're just these, we don't look like super athletes. You might not see somebody in the airport and go, that person's an ultra marathoner. You might be like, they must play softball on Wednesday nights in the beer league. But sure, they will show up on Saturday or whatever and just stomp you, you know, and like rip through 50 miles. And I think that's what I kind of love about the whole sport. But yeah, I guess I'm just trying to encourage people to think of different ways to be successful, because comparing yourself to fast people is a really, what's the saying? Comparison is the thief of joy. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'm not in it to win it at all. And neither are, you know, you go to the New York City Marathon, there's 53,000 people running. Your odds are not one in 53,000. They're way less than that. But it is like the coolest way to see New York City. You know, you cannot do it without being in the marathon, or arguably, I guess you could do the five borough bike ride. But like running the streets of that city while it's, you know, they're closed down to traffic is amazing. And to be down on yourself because you ran a 3:31 instead of a 3:20, you know, is like, to me, not a great way to experience it. I just love it. Of course, I've only done it once, but, you know, like in subsequent, you know, installments, I would love to go back and do the same thing. And yeah, being fast is one way to succeed for sure. But yeah, like most of us aren't going to win, you know. I don't think I've got a first place trophy for anything in my entire life. If I think back on it, like
join the club, my friend.
Right. Yeah. That's what I mean. But like, and I'm not saying I'm, you know, somebody to set your watch by or like look up to, but yeah, I think the biggest trophy I got was for second place in the district spelling bee in like sixth grade or whatever. So it's like, you know, what are that you shouldn't, I think about the belt buckles and the medals you get for completing an ultra marathon, and you could look at it and say, oh yeah, it's like a participation trophy. And I'm like, okay, show me another participation trophy that's this hard to get.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, yeah, I don't know. It's not like a free ice cream cone you get for sitting on the bench for the entire Little League game and, you know, pinch running for somebody at one, you know, it's not like that participation trophy. Like ultra belt buckles and ultra race medals are extreme, like, achievements, really, you know?
You know, and if you really step back two steps and look at this running thing pragmatically, and you're thinking, okay, the majority of the training runs are not going to be easy. There's going to be some crap. You're going to be painful. You're probably going to have to go through some injuries. It's not going to be, I'm using air quotes, fun. The chances of you winning anything or getting on a podium are next to getting struck by lightning. Why do we do it? It's not fun. You're not going to win anything. So why do we do it? And I want to ask both of you guys, why do you do it then? If it's something that Brendan, you say you hate, and you're never going to win, why do you do it?
Well, I mean, I think that's maybe why I became a writer and an artist, is because you don't have to win. There's no objective way of looking at it. You know, people can't go, what's the best album that came out this year? And you're like, well, that's a different answer for everybody. I mean, of course the Grammys will say, you know, one thing or another, but who cares what they say, you know?
And they're wrong, so, by the way. They're wrong.
Yeah, exactly. So it's all like, art is so subjective. Eddie Vedder from Pearl Jam had some great speech at an award ceremony when Pearl Jam was getting an award, and said something to the effect of giving awards for art is ridiculous, but sure, thanks, you know? So yeah, why do it? I don't know. Like, I mean, I really think it's something that, for me, I was curious about whether or not I could do it. And that remains the same every time I go into a race. But there's also the community, which a lot of people will talk about for sure. But I guess the story I think of is I did my first 50-mile race was the Ice Age Trail 50 in Wisconsin. My friend Jason and I did it. We actually flew from Colorado to do it, but my brother lives nearby there. So I thought, oh, we'll just make a little family visit out of it and run the race. And Jason and I ended up finishing about a half hour before the cutoff. So like our time was like 11 and a half hours or something. And, you know, we sat down real quick at the finish line, had something to drink and like put on some warm clothes. And then we were walking to the car and I just heard this enormous cheer erupt from the finish line. And I thought, what just happened? You know? And I realized, oh, that was the last place person finishing. You know, that was the last person to finish before the cutoff. And I guarantee you, whoever won that race didn't get that cheer. And there's something about the way we think about that last place person. Like, that is such a testament to the human spirit that you stuck with it. In some cases, you're out there almost twice as long as the person who won the race. So you're doing almost a completely different sport. You know, it's a completely different mental thing. So I enjoy that. I enjoy people discovering that they're capable of things way beyond what they thought they could do. And within whatever time limit is, you know, we've decided they're able to do it and learn something about themselves. And in a lot of cases, show their kids that they could do it, or show their parents that they could do it, or whoever else. And you've got this like sort of exponentially spreading inspiration, I guess, going forward from that. So sorry, that was kind of a long answer.
No, it was a great answer. And I really loved it. The capturing of the human spirit of the finisher is so, so good. You said you wanted both of us to answer that, Scott. And what made me think about, you know, my chances of winning are non-existent. But if I'm out there against the 300, it isn't 300, it's 300 companions that are out there, but the race becomes very much one-on-one to me. Me against that trail, me against the distance, me against the profile, me against the heat, me against all the things that are to be coming at me. And I have a chance to either win that day or lose that day. I'm gonna have a chance to be a winner in my own world, in my own race. As I'm out there running it and I'm on the trail, it's clearly not me against anybody else, but us all together competing against the elements, against the hardness, against the obstacles that are coming at us. And some we can predict, some that just come up on us. We've got to solve, problem solve. We can help one another by lending something, a goo, a wrap, just an encouraging word. We're all out there racing one-on-one against ourselves, against the trail, against everything. And so I think we're all winners. You know, this thing, you know, sounds like a bunch of rah-rah stuff, but I think we do all have the chance to step on our own podium. And that's why I think we go out there.
And be a better version of ourselves and continue to grow.
Yeah, for sure. Have you two ever been to Chamonix for the UTMB?
Yes.
I think that's the greatest finish line in sports. You know, you got people like just battling. You have people running fast. You have people going slow. You have people grabbing their kids for the last couple hundred feet, grabbing their dogs. Like, I the first time I saw it, I was just standing there just with a lump in my throat for like hours just watching the whole thing, pounding on the boards. Like, this is so exciting. Even I don't even know what place these people are in. 1200, who knows, you know? But it's so inspiring.
It's a complete different culture there. You know, a race happens here invisibly unless you're in the community, you know about it. But over there, it's everybody is alert, awake, understand what's happening when it starts, when it stops. And as you're walking around over there, because I was there pre-race stuff, and if somebody has a band on that indicates that they're a race participant, they're all of a sudden just very much exalted. They're someone that's really important. It doesn't even matter how fast you are or how old you are or what your chances of winning or not. It's just you're respected as a participant.
It's a big deal.
It's a cool culture.
Yeah.
So go to the Alps.
Yes. Hey, I want to talk about because I think this is important in the time and the society that we're in, where we're tweeting or posting on Instagram or Facebook or whatever, and we're comparing our Strava accounts and everything like that. I love the very last, it's actually the epilogue, where there's no right way to do it. Talk to us a little bit about that, Brendan.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can probably look around for answers to this, and like, I was just joke, like, if you want to know if you're doing it wrong, just go to the internet and ask somebody. They'll tell you. You know, usually it's a white man who's going to tell you you're wrong. Yeah. Like, you know, like my, not like myself, someone who looks like me will probably have an opinion on what you're doing. And I think it's just like there's something in a previous chapter where that it's about freedom to me, where you can pick this thing to do, you know, for yourself, and you don't have to answer to anybody about it. You can post it on Strava if you want. You can not use Strava at all. You can privately post it to Strava if you just want to use it to keep track for yourself. You don't have to tell your boss, you know, you don't have to prove to anyone that you're doing a good job at it. You can go out and just do it for an hour and a half a week or 10 hours a week, whatever you want to do. And you can make up your own goals and do it. And I think that's what's beautiful about it. And we can definitely get hung up on different things that we think we should be doing as runners. I've heard people say, we just interviewed a guy last week who is a young guy, and he's like, I don't know, I haven't run a marathon yet, but everybody seems to, you know, think that that's like the big thing you should do as a runner. So maybe I'll do it. And I'm like, well, you don't have to, you know, just the same as nobody, you don't have to do an ultra marathon, or if you do ultra marathons, you don't have to try to run a 100-mile race. It's like there's so many different ways to enjoy it and grow as a person, that to get hung up on the things other people are doing is can be rough and can make you not want to do it, which I think is a failure. So yeah, the whole book is just to encourage people to try, you know, and give themselves permission to try something and decide on their own definition of success or failure, whatever that is, and hopefully success in some way. So I don't think I have. I want it to be open ended in guidance. Just be like, just get out there and have fun, you know. Even if you want to run on a treadmill 8 hours a week, and that's your definition of success, that's great. I would never want to do that myself, but if that works for you, you should do it, you know.
Yeah, and your comments make me think about give yourself permission and be kind to yourself and enjoy what you're doing. If you want to walk that one piece because you enjoy that section, or the sun feels good, or maybe it's just hard and you want to make it a little easier, don't always push. Now, there's time and a place. Absolutely. There's times you have to push to become better. You want to work on your leg speed. You want to work on your climbing. It's got to be hard sometimes. Sometimes that's what we're after and what we like. But there are other times that you should be kind to yourself and say, you know what, if I had one final day left to run or on this planet, would I run this section, or would I just soak it all in and just love it as much as I can? So there's a time to pause and what's the old saying? Stop and smell the roses. You know, we should do that out on the trail too, and just embrace the beauty of it all and enjoy the hard, enjoy the easy, and make it as much fun as possible.
For sure. There's a quote from Amelia Boone, which I wish I had included in the book, but I think I forgot about it when I was writing it, or hadn't seen it yet. But it's something like, if I had to pick one and I could only race or I could only train, I would definitely train. Mm. And I think about that too. It's like all the hours you put in running just so you can run like 26 miles or 13 miles or whatever. Those are all these memories you get running with friends or sunsets, sunrises, that time you were caught in a rainstorm, whatever. And at the end of your year, all that stuff is in your head. And you may remember part of the race too is a big memory, but you have all these hours that you're out there by yourself just making memories. And like that to me is what it's all about.
David Roche, the author of the book Happy Runner, states exactly that. He said, the race day is just a celebration from all your training.
Well,
yep. Yeah. David is the Ted Lasso of the running world, I believe, as a friend of mine says.
Well, and there's a picture is worth 1,000 words, or in this case, an iPad drawn illustration is worth 1,000 words, because you have that mm-hmm. in there. If I can remember right, it's an upward arrow going left to right of the training. And then at the very top is the race. And there's two different versions of that, where the race is the enjoyment, or I can't remember how you labeled it.
I think it's the good stuff.
Yeah, explain that graph, because I think that's beautiful.
I actually made that for a corporate talk I was giving about. I ran 52 marathons in 2019, and I was kind of like, what are the lessons you can take away from work? And we think of work as this process to get to the good stuff at the end, and if you look back on it, you'll realize that the good stuff was happening all along. Like the actual work was the good stuff. So that's those two graphs side by side. Very simple chart in there. And the chapter's called It's Only Half About Running. But yeah, it's like that exact thing illustrated for sure.
Well, Brendan, we so much appreciate your time. We appreciate your book and your messages that you've put together. And it's inspired us, and I'm certain it'll inspire others. I think it's, you know, as Scott led off the conversation, hey, grab a couple of these, toss one over to your running companion who you spend a lot of time with and a lot of trail or road time speaking to. This will spur a lot of great conversation and remind one another of lessons. And I think it's a great gift. We should gift more, Scott. We should gift more.
We should.
Not only we should gift compliments, we should gift encouragements, but sometimes, you know, nothing substitutes a gift, a physical gift.
You know, runners, we share a goo to our friends in need. Maybe we need to share more books. The book's name is I Hate Running, and you can too, How to Get Started and Make Sense of an Irrational Passion. You can find it at all of the different book outlets, or you could go to Brendan's website, semi-rad.com. We'll include that in the show notes for Don Freeman, who won't remember, but he does look at the show notes. Or you can find Brendan on the podcast Off the Couch. So Brendan, thank you so much for joining us, and thanks for just a great book. This is going to fuel conversations between Don and me for probably 2 months.
We need to run more often, Scott. 2 months.
Yeah.
We'll go out and run.
Moss.
We'd like to thank all of our listeners that have made TRN the number one running podcast in North America and around the world. A special thanks go to our Patreon supporters who help us with the production of the episode. If you would like to support the podcast, go to our website and click on the Support Us tab, or go to patreon.com/trailrunnernation. We have some exclusive benefits there, including an entry into the Kokopelli 1000 race. Details will be shared on this unique race in the future. You also get access to the bonus miles, which is the recording after the recording. And speaking of Patreon supporters, a special thanks goes to Doug Crumley with Crumley and Associates, your personal wealth advisor. Doug's team's like a coach for your money and your lifestyle. He can be found at DougCrumleyJr.com. That's DougCrumleyJr.com. The TRN podcast are produced by Doug Mayer and our editorial assistant, Tate Pullman. And make sure you check back next Friday for another episode of Trail Runner Nation.